is Santana Adams in partnership with the Kentucky Historical Society and the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The time is 6:11 p.m. It is 4/20/2022. Our current location is 337 High Street, Apartment 6, and I'm speaking with
Tessin and Cornette.
All right, before we begin, if there's anything that you don't want to talk about or any language that you don't want to use at any point during the interview, you can simply say, I prefer not to talk about this, and we can move on from that. But we'll go ahead and get started. If you wouldn't mind to restate your name and then give your age and your place of birth.
Okay, my name is Destiny Cornett. I'm 23 years old, and I was born in Hazard, Kentucky.
What schools have you attended, and what is your current level of educational attainment?
I've only went to KU for college, and I'm a senior here.
And then just a little bit about your work history and your current occupation.
I'm mostly a student, but I work as a library student worker as well, and I do retail on the weekends. And that's about it, really. I've worked fast food before. I've done other little odd jobs just to get me through to where I am now.
Sounds good. So moving on to the protest. And what locations did you attend protests for the summer of 2020?
I attended one in Lexington and one in Hazard.
Okay. And about for each protest, if you'd give the location again, and then about the amount of time that you spent on the ground at each location.
Okay. I think at Lexington it maybe was like 2 to 3 hours, and then the Hazard one was at most an hour.
And did you help organize a protest, or did you help organize a group of friends to go, or did you simply go with a group of friends for the protest?
I just went with a group of friends. We had all talked about it, and we all wanted to go, so we decided to go together.
How did you find out about the protest? Did social media or the news play any part in determining what protest that you went to?
I heard about it through social media. I think maybe my friends heard about it on Twitter or Instagram, and I had also have been seeing it on Instagram. And I don't think social media played a role into which protest I would go to, maybe. I knew I wanted to go to one, and I just was more about seeking out one through social media.
So, like, it was more of you had already made up your mind about going, it was just finding one to go to.
Exactly.
What made you decide that protesting was necessary? What were your personal reasons for participating?
I don't think we should sit idly by while murder happens.
Okay. Was there any, like, super personal reasons, any family members or any big moments that you were, like your call to action, like something that finally made you be like, okay, like, it's time to get outside and do this?
Honestly, seeing how white people could help people of color at protests was really meaningful to me. Being a white person, I wanted to do the best that I could to help people of color at that time. So seeing how white people were being like shields or just being there in support and stuff like that, I just wanted to do my part in any way to do good.
Did you have any reservations or hesitations about participating in the protest?
If I did, it was probably because of the pandemic going on. I'm just worried about being sick and it passing on to someone, or getting sick myself and then again passing it on to more people. But that was about the only reservations. I wasn't scared or anything like that, other than for COVID.
Okay, that works perfect into the next question. So just generally, when COVID-19 started, how did it impact the way that you were living your life in terms of work, school, and your social life?
Well, I was living on campus, and they moved us all that were living on campus into Grand Campus, which was very beautiful. Could not complain. but other than that, I mean, it put everything else on hold. I didn't want to go out as much. I was staying in more. I wasn't being as sociable as I wish I could have been, especially for my college experience. Other than that, just putting everything on hold and making everyone else like a little weary about about being around each other.
Mm-hmm. If you were working at the time, did your workplace shut down, move to paid leave, or start up with, or did your workplace start up with unemployment or anything like that?
I was working at the library, and campus closed or whatever. We went completely online for that time. No. No, they did not give me money, but well, the school gave us the CARES Act, so maybe, if
yeah.
you consider that.
So, like, supplemental funds?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Then, how might this have changed during or after the protest? Like, so after you got out and protested, did you see any change in the way that yourself or others around you, like how they were taking the protocols? Did they loosen up? Did they stay the same? Did they get more strict with the way they were wearing masks or participating in social distancing?
I think after the protest, protocols started to get more strict. I'm not sure if it's because of something to do with the protest or if it's just simply because COVID was getting harder to deal with and so we had to do more stricter protocols. Yeah, I would say that they probably did get more strict, but I'm not sure why.
That's fair. Do you feel like you felt a need to be more strict with yourself after the protest? Did you, like, change the way that you were personally using masks or social distancing, or do you feel like it stayed the same for yourself?
I think it mostly stayed the same because I was already social distancing for the most part. However, I remember after the protest, I didn't want to go out too much more because I was just around a big mass of people. I took a little bit to make sure I didn't have any symptoms before going to the grocery store or something like that. And I think my roommates and I did the same thing. We knew that we had been protesting and stuff, so we needed to be a little bit extra more precautious in case that we had COVID.
Mm-hmm. So do you take, like, a quarantine period afterwards?
I think we would. Lamont, not strict, to be honest with you, just, like, maybe 3 to 5 days, and if we had symptoms, we would, of course, go get tested, but I don't even remember us having ever symptoms or anything like that, so just being precautious in that sense.
Okay. So, of course, you protested during the COVID-19 pandemic because this is when these things were taking place. What made you feel like breaking public health protocols against larger public gatherings was necessary in this case?
Well, COVID could put a lot of things on hold, but one thing that they couldn't put on hold was how bad racism is in America and how black people are overpunished and over, just over, ever, like, cops are just unfair to black people, and COVID couldn't stop that. So COVID stopped a lot of stuff socially and all that, but these protests needed to happen, I think. I think that no matter what, if anything was going on, I think people wanted to protest and for this to be seen and heard and not ignored.
Definitely. So do you feel like it was kind of this idea of death was happening either way, so it was important to take a stand because that was occurring?
Yeah, I think so. I think some stuff you do have to put on hold for COVID, of course, but this was just one thing that couldn't go on the back burner. It needed to be dealt with, and I think people wanted to feel heard. And I know I wanted to go and help people feel heard and help the message be spoken and listened to. So I just think that COVID couldn't stop this, and I wonder what could have, like, if anything really could have, because it's serious, you know, it needs to be done.
Definitely. So I know you talked about this a little bit earlier, but did you feel like you were putting yourself or others at risk because of COVID protocols being broken? And also if that changed based on being in Lexington versus being in Hazard?
Yeah, I would be, I think I'd be ignorant to say that I didn't put anyone at risk by going to these protests, because going there and being around all these people and having, if I had COVID, it could have put so many people at risk. I think that it was challenging to decide to go during COVID, but the push to go was more worthy to go than to not go. But how did it change between going to Hazard and going to Lexington?
Yeah, so, like, if you could state, like, maybe what the estimated crowd size you were in for Hazard versus for Lexington was, and then maybe how that made you feel surrounding any concerns for COVID.
Yeah, the Hazard one was a lot smaller than the Lexington one. And with that being said, after the Lexington one, I was probably a little bit more weary of COVID symptoms and just having COVID and stuff like that. At the Hazard one, I think I wore a mask. I think that was when masks were becoming more like a protocol instead of an option.
Yeah.
And for the Lexington one, I don't think I wore a mask. I don't think it was the time. It wasn't yet required to. Or, of course, I would have. But, so I do wonder how much the risk was compared to those. Because the Hazard one was a lesser crowd, but I had a mask on.
Definitely. So there is a question that I'm realizing now I skipped that I want to go back to, which I think is important for what we're talking about. Whether, you know, generally or exact dates, around what time did you participate in the protest? Was it towards the beginning of the summer or towards the end of the summer?
The Lexington one was towards the beginning and the Hazard one was towards the end.
Okay.
I think anyways.
I just wanted to clarify because that makes sense with what you're talking about with the masking protocols. So, what were your thoughts about the pandemic at the time the protests started?
I was really scared because it seemed like college was being took away from me, life was being put on hold, people were dying from a disease that just randomly started, it felt like. I was scared and stuff, but also I was just kind of hopeful that we'd get over this or find a solution or that it would all be okay eventually. Just trying to hold on to hope.
Definitely. So what were some thoughts that you experienced on the day before going into these protests, if you knew beforehand that you were going to a protest? So, like, were there any major themes or thoughts that you can remember that were running through your mind as you were thinking about participating?
Yeah, I'm an activist at heart, so it doesn't take a lot for me to fight for a worthy cause. So I was honestly, I felt excited that I got this opportunity to go help. I was also enraged, though, that this was happening and that that we are having to protest over people being able to live or not, or to be able to feel safe or not. I wanted to do my very best, and I wanted to help, and I had thoughts of course, like, of being a little weary of, like, oh, what if cops are mad, or what if police are there and that they're not doing what they should be doing, or just being policemen. I had some concerns and stuff like that, but mostly I had thoughts of just wanting to help.
Definitely. Do you think that you had any difference in thoughts before the protest when it came down to location? So based on whether it was in Hazard or whether it was in Lexington, were you more comfortable in one place than you were the other?
Surprisingly more comfortable in Lexington. I know I'm from Hazard, so you would think I'd be more comfortable there. But Hazard's more southern, more country, more racist. So I don't know why. I thought that there would be a counter-protest or just someone with the wrong message there that wasn't being an ally. I was more weary of that. But in Lexington, it's so much more diverse. I didn't have to worry about that as much. I knew that even if there were policemen, the majority of people there are going to be protesters for the BLM movement. So I was more comfortable in the Lexington one just because it felt more of an atmosphere I wanted to be in.
Okay. So do you think that maybe the larger, the fact that the crowd was larger than the amount of policemen played into your liking of the Lexington protest more than the Hazard? Like, because it was larger, maybe that made you feel more comfortable?
Maybe. It could have. I don't know. The Hazard one was nice. It was a march, like a marching protest, and it was silent, too.
Mm-hmm.
And the Lexington one wasn't silent, and I think that was another thing that I really liked is to hear these voices, like, shouting chants and stuff, and actually hearing what they wanted to say. And while at the Hazard one, it was silent, so there were people of color there, but they all only had signs, and we weren't chanting and stuff, and it almost felt like we were still taking their voice away.
Mm-hmm.
if that makes sense.
No, definitely. I think that makes a lot of sense. So, let's see. Going back to the same kind of thing we're talking about, which we've got into a little bit, what was it like in the crowds during the protest, and what stuck out to you most about the events, if you want to talk about this based on location?
Okay. I'll talk about the Hazard one because it's a little bit more fresh in my memory. The Hazard one, like I said, was a march, and it was silent, and we walked through the whole downtown area with signs, or with your dog. I took my dog. And there was, me and my friend got some shirts, some BLM shirts, and we wore them and stuff. And it was really cool to see people in my town, like, have signs and stuff, and to be surprised that so many people were more open-minded and less conservative than I thought, or honestly, just less bootleggers.
Yeah.
Like I thought they would be. And the Lexington one, what really stood out is just, like, how many people were, like, rallying the crowd and trying to get people in, like, to chant and to say stuff or to do stuff, to go stand near the policemen. It was just, it was really cool to see these people of color, like, leading all these groups and telling us what to do, and it felt like we were actually doing something and that we were listening to people that actually needed to be listened to. The only thing that I really remember about the Lexington one that, like, stood out is that there were policemen there. And at the Hazard one, there was policemen there, but not like there were at the Lexington one. There was tons of policemen at the Lexington one, and they stood in the crowd with us. And they didn't make anything violent or anything like that. They just stood there silent and just watched us, which, of course, is weary and scared because policemen can abuse their power at any moment. But I was surprised to see them just, like, people would yell at them in their face and stuff and, like, get up in their face and, like, I'm surprised to see that policemen just stood there and didn't abuse their power.
Hmm. Okay. So talking about these chants that we hear coming out of Lexington, can you remember any of the ones that you remember being used throughout the night? Like, were there any particular chants that you were hearing?
Mostly say their names. And then we would say their names of all the victims that they would say their names and we would repeat them, or we would just chant, say their names. We would chant Black Lives Matter, Silence Equals Violence, or something else. I think we chanted too.
So, did you receive any training for how to act nonviolently or to safely protest beforehand, whether this might have been in person, through social media, or through your own research?
Through my own research, mostly, and through social media. I follow a lot of activism pages, especially on Instagram. So a lot of them would, like, prepare you and stuff. Most of them, though, I'll be honest, like, you couldn't prepare, really. Like, they were over-preparing, I guess I should say, like, to prepare for, like, tear gas and stuff like that. And that just wasn't something that ever came about. Like, I never was, like, when I got there, I realized, like, they're not going to tear gas us. Like,
yeah.
It's not like that. But they really prepared you for anything that could have happened, and I really enjoyed feeling that way. It made me less scared. It made me feel, you know, ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, mostly through social media or my own research.
And did you see any, which is just something I've heard in previous interviews, did you see, like, any medic tents set up or tents giving out, like, water and food or just supplies to help the crowd?
I didn't see any tents. I saw people with backpacks on giving out water.
Okay. Okay. So did you face any threats of violence or intimidation, or did you see anyone who was facing any threats of violence or intimidation?
I think the cops that were out there for the Lexington one was there for intimidation reasons, just to put fear into the hearts of protesters that something could happen. They are there. However, I didn't see any threats or violence or anything like that. I saw some people jump on police cars, but that was about the only thing that was a little threatening.
And then in Hazard, did you face any threats of intimidation or seeing anti-protesters?
See, I thought we would have because a lot of people, especially on social media at the time, was very, like, from Hazard, because where most of my people on Facebook are on Hazard, from Hazard. But I saw a lot of people talking about the BLM protests and not being, like, being against it and not for it. And so, like I said, I thought there would be an anti-protest or a counter-protest to the BLM protest in Hazard. However, there wasn't. And I don't think I saw any negative or, again, countering or anything like that at the Hazard one. It was just the people that showed up clearly wanted to be there, and the people that didn't, I think, stayed home.
Okay. So, we covered this one. So, for Kentucky, we know that one of the major sparks in protesting in this region specifically was the death of Breonna Taylor. So, what do you know about her life, and what do you know about her death?
I'll be honest, I knew more about her case and her death when the protests were going on, but to my knowledge, police showed up to her house at the wrong address. It was very misconstrued and a very big mistake, and they shot her while she was in her bed, I mean, in the back, I think, like, over, like, 5 times, and she died. And her boyfriend was in the room, and I think he was also fired at. He had a firearm, I think, to protect himself, because the cops just bust down the door, no knock. And I think, to my knowledge, the person they were looking for was already in custody, like, complete big mess up, like, shouldn't have been this big of a fuck up, but it was. I think that's the story.
Okay. And do you know anything about what Breonna Taylor's occupation was at the time of everything occurring?
She was a nurse, right?
She was an EMT worker, but, was her death in any way uniquely motivating? Was there anything about that, or multiple things about that, that really kind of struck a nerve?
Well, her being from Kentucky, from Louisville, it of course, you know, it shows that this is happening in our backyard. It's happening in Kentucky. It's happening in other states. It's happening everywhere. But during the pandemic, we were already kind of shown how important EMT workers, nurses, doctors were and stuff. And I think hearing that we lost someone who was helping during the pandemic and helping, like, you know, save lives and stuff like that, it just made it even worse. Not that you have to save lives in order for your life to be worthy or anything like that, but it just, you know, it just shows even more. It's like, well, she could have been helping people in the pandemic and stuff like that. She had so much more to be doing and to live and stuff like that. And I think it just hit close to home, mostly because of her being from Kentucky, but also just because we're literally living through a pandemic and we shouldn't be treating any nurse, EMT, doctor as expendable right now.
Definitely. Was there anything about the way that they entered the home that bothered you?
Yeah, the no-knock rule is absolutely insane. Because it's weird to think that if someone is trespassing on your property, you can shoot them. However, policemen are allowed to trespass on your property with no warrant, no justifiable reason, other than that they have the power. It's just not fair. It doesn't make sense. It's honestly very enraging to me that we allow that, and that there's so many other loopholes that they have that they can break and somehow infringe on our rights. And it always be to the benefit of them and never to the benefit of the people they should be serving.
Okay. Do you remember, just a couple of details I want to ask about, I've been doing this throughout the interviews, do you remember seeing how many officers showed up at Breonna Taylor's apartment?
I don't, but I think I remember it being more than 4.
Okay. And then, do you remember if, so, I know you said that they did not, do you remember if they announced themselves in any way?
I don't think so, but they might have, I would imagine they have to do something. They can't, I don't know, I would imagine that they can't just bust in. I would imagine they have to say, like, police coming in or something like that, but then again, she died in her bed, like, very unaware, it seemed, of the situation that was going on. And so I would imagine that they probably either gave little to no warning or no warning at all.
And then just one last question on that topic. Do you know what the supposed charge was or the reason for their entry into the apartment? What were they claiming was the justification for that?
They were looking for her ex-boyfriend, I think. And I think they just either thought he would be with her or something, or thought that he would be there or something like that. Even though I think she was seeing another man already, the man that they were looking for was in custody. So, again, it was just all very, like, they had no reason, but whatever.
Yeah. So, were there other people's lives or deaths that were also meaningful to you? So, were there other names or other cases that you had heard of before this? That were also kind of inspiring to get into protesting?
The one when I was younger, Trayvon Martin, I learned about that one when I was younger, and he was a young boy that was murdered by police, and that really bothered me, just because he was literally a child. Not that it shouldn't be a child, it shouldn't be an adult, it shouldn't be anyone, but it just shows that they have no regard at all for black people.
Mm.
And then Elijah McClain was another one, just because he seemed like a weird guy and I'm a weird girl, so I don't know. It just, like, his story, like, kind of hit home because he was just going home being, like, a little goofy and a little himself, it sounded like, and cops murdered him because he had a ski mask on or something like that. And he even asked the cops, like, please don't shoot me. And it just shows that, like, it could happen to anybody, especially if you're black, but it's even weirder whenever you can connect with people and you're like, wow, like, I could have been their friend, like, I could have known them, or just anything. Like, it just sucks because it's like, it just shouldn't be happening.
It feels kind of senseless.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, are you or were you involved with BLM or any other organizations during the time of protest?
I don't know if I would say, I mean, I support BLM. I don't know if I would say I'm completely involved with BLM because I'm not a black person, so I don't want to say that I'm an organizer or anything like that, or anything, or to say or take credit over black people and their work and stuff like that. But I wanted protests, so I did, and I wanted to be an ally, and I want to continue to be an ally in any way that I can. So that's what I'll say.
So, although you aren't, like, specifically, like, associated with the organization itself, how would you perceive their goals or the meaning behind Black Lives Matter?
I would see that the goal is to be able to be treated fairly by the police, and there not be racial injustices that go on in our justice system. And I think that mostly is that they don't want to be killed randomly by black people. They don't want to be, I mean, by cops, I'm sorry. Black people don't want to be killed randomly by the police or to be killed at all by the police. I think the goal is really to get police to be held accountable for their wrongdoings, and to get them to be what they're supposed to do. They're supposed to serve and protect,
mm-hmm.
not murder us.
So in relation to that, how do you feel about the slogan Blue Lives Matter?
I think it's absolutely stupid. I don't think blue lives exist. It's a protest to the BLM protest, and a protest to my protest is not, you know, you're not really protesting anything. You're just saying something to make the other side mad. And that's what it all is. It's not, they don't care. Most people who say Blue Lives Matter do not care about the police. They just don't care about black people.
Mm. Do you feel like that a person who backs Blue Lives Matter gets to go home and take off that uniform every night versus a person of color who can't or shouldn't have to remove the color of their skin?
Exactly. That's why I would say blue lives doesn't matter and they don't exist, is because if there is no blue lives, you're a policeman. It's your career, or you're a policewoman. It's your job. It's your career, and you can quit any time. You can't quit being a black person, as you were saying.
Mm. Okay. So the next phrase I wanted to ask about was, how would you define the slogan "Defund the Police," and what does that mean to you?
to me, that means allowing there to be space for other occupations to respond to emergencies or 911 calls, or just being there instead of, like, replacing some places where instead of calling a policeman, you call a social worker or a therapist or something like that. Defunding the police, to me, just means allowing there to be more room for there to be other people to come and help other than just policemen. Because sometimes you don't need an authoritarian figure to come and help you. You need someone who's welcoming and kind. Like, if you're responding to a mental health crisis, it would make sense to send a therapist and send a policeman. However, we don't do that.
No. So if you could make a change to the way that policing is done when it comes to the education of police officers, what would you say would be helpful for them to add into their training regimens?
I really think policemen shouldn't be able to move around. They should have to police in their neighborhood. That way it's more local and you know the city more, and it's a little less like you're being put into a new territory. I know this is a little randomly off topic, but I think policing your own neighborhood would be a good start for police. It's not a big jump or anything like that, but it would allow, like, I don't know, like, I have a guy that I graduated with who's now a cop for Louisville, and he doesn't know anything about Louisville, you know, like, why is he as a policeman there in Louisville and not in Hazard, or just something like that. But also, I think if they are going to police these new neighborhoods, especially if it's a white man, then they should have to have education about racism and about how to not be racist. Like, if you're going to have to police a neighborhood that's mostly black, then you should be forced, I'm just going to be saying, you should be forced to not be racist. You should have to learn how to not be racist. Because I think a lot of people don't realize that racism is indoctrinated into us, and that you have to break away from these thoughts, and you have to train yourself to not think racist thoughts, and it's okay to learn how to not be racist.
Do you think that, based off the thoughts you're speaking of, do you think that maybe relocating police officers to larger cities or to different locations might play a bit into their fear and racism and make them underqualified?
Exactly. That's why I say police your own neighborhood, is because when you take cops, or men, I should say, or women, when you take people and you move them into new cities and it's more diverse and they've never been around a diverse place, then of course there's going to be racial injustices or stereotypes, racism, just because these people who are mainly around white people, and then suddenly they're in such a diverse area, they're going to have all these biases and stereotypes in their head, and they're going to act on them because they've never been around people where they've never been around diversity. So it's just, you know, it's just how they're going to act and stuff. Not everyone, of course. Some people are going to have some built-in kindness and empathy. But I think a lot of it is just, like, they get moved to this new area and they have all this confusion and they're scared, of course. It's a new job, it's a new area. And now they're also dealing with all these racist thoughts, and I think they act on them.
Do you think being scared with the gun might be part of the problem?
That, too. I'm not sure. I'm not really big for guns in the first place. I'm not sure if we should have policemen with guns, or if we shouldn't, if it should be certain policemen, if it should only be a few policemen. But clearly, guns shouldn't be the first thing they reach for.
Hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So we know with policing, and if you didn't know, you can't become a police officer until you're 21 years of age, at least in the state of Kentucky, and then you go through a training program that I think is around 21 to 22 weeks. Do you think there should be a requirement for a college degree or a longer amount of time being spent in training before you complete?
A college degree, I think, would be important and necessary. I know some people don't support that idea, but one thing I noticed about whenever you come to college is that they make you do a culture class. And I got to take an African-American class. And that taught me a lot about Black lives, and it taught me a lot about people of color in general. And I just think how beneficial, like, honestly, how beneficial that would be for the whole school to take, not just people who want to be policemen or policewomen. I just think it's, because it really, like, it really shows you, like, I mean, just all the biases in your head and stuff like that and how to eliminate them. And you're in a class with mostly black people, and you're getting to hear black people talk and have a voice and stuff like that and hear their opinions. And that's so important, especially when you're talking about Black Lives Matter or whenever you're talking about people of color and racial injustices. And I think, yeah, I think cops do need either more training or more education. And if it is, if it's one or the other, then both, it should be incorporated that they take a cultural class where they learn to not be racist.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I know that George Floyd is another one of these cases that was a major spark, and I know that there's some videos out there of the things that happened. Do you think that the ability now to film the police, or having the technology to film police and body cams, is a positive or a negative, or what are your thoughts around that?
I think it's a positive thing. However, I think it makes police more angry whenever you pull out a camera, because they know that their ass is on the line. But it sucks that their body cams can be something that they have power over. I wish that they had a no-off button. And I wish that it was easier to film police, but not all the times are you going to feel comfortable to film a policeman, especially as a person of color being pulled over, a person of color dealing with police. It's going to take a lot to film them, and not that you should have to, because you shouldn't have to be in fear of the police that you have to film them, but it's just something we've learned to do because of how they act.
Definitely. So I know that the police really stand behind this serve and protect. Do you feel like the policemen that you've interacted with, or the policemen that you saw in the protest, lived up to this, or maybe that there was an ulterior motive behind their participation, like kind of how you spoke about Lexington?
Like I said, I think they were there at the Lexington protest to be an intimidation factor, to make people weary of acting out, even though if it is acting out, it's because of what police do. I don't know. The policemen that I have encountered with, I haven't encountered with very many, and it's just a handful of times. And I would say, like, most of them do seem to have, like, really high pride in what they're doing and stuff like that. However, I would say they're not doing much. I don't think they serve and protect. I think that they stand there and they act like they're protecting and serving more than they are serving and protecting.
Mm-hmm. So how did participating in these protests, how did it impact your relationships with your friends, family, or community? Did you face any resistance or grow closer to anyone because of this?
Me and my friends, of course, grew closer because it just showed that we're all like-minded and we're not racist. So, of course, I was a big fan of that. With my family and stuff, especially where Facebook is, like, a great way for people to just share their opinions, no matter if they're wrong or right. But, it estranged me a little bit from my parents and stuff, just because they're not Blue Lives Matter to say, but they're also not going to say Black Lives Matter.
Sure. Do you think that that's strange coming from a place that has the rebellious history that Hazard has?
Yeah, I do think it's strange. Especially, like, we're rednecks. When did rednecks start liking cops?
Mm-hmm.
I think that all the time. I literally wonder that. Like, when was that ever a part of our history? It is very surprising that I thought more people would be like, yeah, the police are making big mistakes. Like, it doesn't matter if it is, I thought more people would be like, it doesn't matter if it's black people. Like, these are policemen killing people. Like, it's wrong. I thought more people would be like that from Hazard, but no. People are so racist, they will be against anything people of color do.
If there is something that you could do in regions like Hazard in order to curb systematic racism, the kind that leads to the senseless death of people of color by the police, what do you think a potential fix could look like?
I think having less cops respond to scenes would be very helpful, and more therapists, social workers, or anything in between that's not a policeman or a policewoman. I think, again, police should be trained for much more longer, or being educated for a lot longer. I think it should be harder in general to be a police person. There should be a more incentive to be there. If they're going to have to go through more education and more training, then yeah, there should be a better payoff. However, if that's the case, then I want it to be harder. I don't want anyone to become a cop just because they want to protect and serve the community that they don't care about. I would hope that the people who actually, if it's training is longer and education is required, I would hope that would weed out the bad people who just thought that they'd just come in here and get a job and be a policeman and do that for their life or whatever. I don't know. I think that right now we market police as like a job for people who, like, it's like almost as if it's like, oh well, I have nothing else to do. I guess I'll be a cop.
Yeah. Do you feel like maybe demilitarization of the police would help, seeing as we saw a large rise in more violent tactics after 9/11? Do you think that had anything to do with how our policing changed? Because policing, at least to some extent, used to be more community-based.
I think people are very scared of violent acts, despite the police literally doing violent acts. And I don't know. I think people really focus a lot on how people are protesting, when that's not really, I don't know. Maybe I'm too much of a radical, but the looting and all that, sorry if this is not answering your question.
No, you're good.
The looting and rioting, I think were justifiable. If one of my friends died by the police, I'd be doing a hell of a lot more than looting and rioting. Like, I would want to be doing something, like, insane. I would want my friend to get justice, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't see anything wrong with that. I think it's not that violence should ever be matched with violence. It's not that, but I don't think that it was violent. I think that was literally protesting and hurting money, and that's the only thing government cares about is the money. So, hurt them where it hurts.
Hmm. Makes sense. So, kind of around this topic, how did the media depictions of the events differ from your own firsthand, if they did, like maybe a comparison between major news outlets and then social media?
Yeah, well, like I said, social media really prepares you for, like, tear gas, cops shooting rubber bullets, just, you know, all the, like, absolute worst things that you don't want to happening. And, of course, at the time, I was seeing, like, all of the brute end of it, of, like, people literally dying of rubber bullets because cops are shooting them at their heads and stuff like that. Or people, being, like, tear gassed and just watching how what plays out and stuff like that. And then also the conservative side of showing all the looting and the rioting and acting like they were doing so much damage and hurting so many small businesses as if that was their main objective all along, was to hurt these small businesses and to take down America's economy. I think media really over-dramatized it and tried to make an agenda out of it. The agenda being to make looters and rioters or BLM protesters look like they're violent. Even though, I don't, like, as I said, at my protest that I went to, both of them, nothing violent happened at all.
Didn't see any looting or any breaking into buildings or any violence from the crowd itself?
No, not at all. Like I said, the worst thing I saw, and it wasn't even bad, is just, like, people jumping on police cars.
Definitely.
And it didn't do any damage to the cars at all, so.
More like using the cars as a platform?
Yeah, exactly. As a stage.
So what outcomes did you want to see from these protests? Like, what was the hope?
For the murderers to be arrested.
So have your feelings about the protest and the goals of the movement changed since the summer of 2020, whether that be positive or negative, and how do you feel about the protest today?
I mean, I'm very happy I went. I'm proud of me and my friends for doing what we could. I wish I could do more, of course. Looking back at it, I wish I would have went to more protests. I wish I would have donated. I wish donated more and spent more time calling my representatives and being like, arrest those people now. Of course, I always am going to wish that I did more. However, I have such a positive experience from there that it's hard to not, to want to do more, just because I can't complain about it at all. It was great for me, and hopefully it helped Black people feel heard.
Do you feel like the protest had an impact on our society, and if it did, how?
Yeah, I think so. I'm hoping it made police more scared of their power and less greedy with it. I'm also hoping it made people realize that we don't have to just let people with power completely control us and to dictate if we're going to live or not. And I hope it made Black people realize that we care about them. Like, there are white people that want to help, and white people aren't just trying to murder them, that there are some people out there that want to help them.
Definitely. All right. I think that's all I have. Were there any thoughts you'd like to share, topics you'd like to revisit, or just anything you'd like to discuss that we haven't covered yet?
I don't think so.
All right. Thank you so much for letting me interview you.
Thank you.